everybody, and happy new year. It is, of course, the first show of 2026. And if you didn't catch the New Year's Eve stream, I hope you all had a wonderful Christmas, and I wish you all the best for this new year. And I hope it brings a lot of good things for nationalism in every Western nation. So my best wishes go out to you all. And again, I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and a wonderful break. And now regular shows will be resuming as always. And this is the first of those regular shows. And as always, we're live tonight on Odyssey. We're live on Rumble. We're live on DLive. And we are live on Entropy. Now, of course, as always, if you like my work, if you like my shows, if you like the content I produce, also if you like Patriotic Alternative, if you like the real life activity that I'm involved in, you can make donations during the show. You can make donations via Entropy. You can make donations via Rumble. You can subscribe over on Rumble, and everything is very, very gratefully received. Obviously, the money given on the show goes to a good cause. And when I finish a show like this, I always do a Q&A. So if you have a different opinion to my opinion, or if you'd like to add something to the chat or to the debate or ask a question, anything related to this show, you can ask it live during the show, and any message attached to a donation will be read out at the end of the main presentation, and I will answer anything. You can also donate via crypto. All the crypto links are in the description below. As you know, my crypto links are a great way to donate for those who want to do it more anonymously. And you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. I've got to admit, I've taken some time off over Christmas. I think the last day I answered my emails was the Monday before Christmas, or maybe the Tuesday. I haven't answered emails, but I will be getting back to emails on the Monday and Tuesday of next week. There's quite a backlog, so if your email isn't answered until the Tuesday, you know why. Now, tonight's stream is going to be a contentious one. I know that, and a lot of my Friday discussions are contentious. And I'd like to appeal to everybody before we go into this to please listen to the entire show, the whole presentation, before you get upset, get angry, or make a judgment. I'm going to come at this from a more balanced viewpoint, I feel, than the way others have come at this. I think there's some people that have come at this from a less balanced viewpoint, but I'm coming at this from an interesting perspective, because I actually know Dennis. I've actually met him. I've spent time with him. I've trained with him. I've broken bread with him. I've been with him in social circles. I have socialized with him. I've had dinner with him on a couple of occasions. And I'm going to talk about him as a person. And I'm also going to talk about him in terms of what he's involved in now, in terms of the Ukraine conflict. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Ukraine conflict. I'm going to talk about what my perspective is on what Dennis is involved in. And I'm going to talk about my feelings towards what he's doing and as him as a person. So this is probably a little bit different to what most people have said. A lot of people who've written things or spoken about Dennis have spoken about him without actually knowing him. And I find it actually quite interesting, because when I decided to do this stream, and it was a bit of a toss-up, actually, because this is quite a contentious thing to do. The easy stream would have been to do my New Year's predictions. And I actually had a graphic ready to do a prediction stream, because we did a bit of that on New Year's Eve, but I was the only one who didn't really participate. I had the 12 guests. The 12 guests gave their predictions. I didn't actually give my predictions. I didn't do as much talking as the guests. It was sort of me interviewing people from across the British nationalist sphere. But I thought maybe I could do, you know, an hour of what I think is going to happen in 2026 here in Britain. But I thought this was going to be a little bit more contentious, but also a little bit more interesting. And part of what's interesting about this is most people who have written about this from a critical point of view of Dennis have written about it from that point of view without meeting him. Now, the people who've written more kindly and sympathetically about Dennis are all people who knew him. And that might seem quite obvious, but that's not always the case, is it? There's lots of people you meet through your life that you don't have a lot of good things to say about. And when they die, people come out and say, well, this was the truth about person X. He was awful. But that hadn't happened with Dennis. Now, obviously, Dennis, now we know, is not dead. And we'll go through briefly what's happened in a second for those who need to catch up. But I think it's important to state that the people who have said the most scathing things about Dennis are people who never met him, whereas people who said nice things about him, like people like the Golden One and others, and continental Europe, are people who met him, people who trained with him, people who socialized with him. Those people were quite sad when he passed. And actually, when I heard of his passing, and now we know he isn't dead, but when I heard of his passing, I actually got a number of messages from British nationalists, from people I know, from people I hold in very, very high regard, old friends of mine, people who had met Dennis. And all of these people were very, very sad about his passing. So that's the first thing I want to say. Please listen to the whole stream, but please respect the fact that I do know this guy, I have spent time with him, and that everyone who seems to have spent time with him speaks of him highly. And those that don't tend to not have met him or live thousands of miles away and have never had any contact with him. I think that's an interesting point of view. But first, let's go through a little bit about Dennis and about what's actually happened. So Dennis, real name Dennis Kapustin, used to go by the name, when I knew him, Dennis Nikitin, was also known by the name White Rex, which was the name he went under, but also was the name of his clothing brand and his fight club. He's a Russian ethno-nationalist. He's a white nationalist. And he's someone that was passionate, to say the least, about mixed martial arts, physical fitness, training. And he was a very imposing character. Now, we heard, and I believe it was, I'm just going to check when it was actually announced. It was announced, was it just before Christmas or just after Christmas? It was announced that he had been killed, that he had died in combat in the Ukraine. Yeah, December the 30th, it was announced that, was it December the 30th? Let me just check. No, December the 27th, it was announced that he had died, that he had died in combat in the Ukraine. And obviously he was fighting on the Ukrainian side against Russia, and that he'd been killed in active operations, that he died via an FPV drone strike. That was how it was reported. If you don't know what an FPV drone is, it's a first-person view drone. It's one of those drones that people fly around and you have a little camera, you look down at the screen. It's almost like playing a computer game, but the drone's flying in real life, and apparently he was killed. This caused quite a wave on the internet and in the mainstream media. It was all over the news that he'd been killed. And as I said, some people came out very supportive, very sad about Dennis's passing. But then it was actually yesterday, when I was getting the graphic ready for this stream to talk about him, when it emerged that he's actually still alive. And I'm going to read something for you so you can sort of see what I'm talking about. Here we go. Dead man returns to life. Ukraine fakes death of anti-Russian fighter. Ukrainian military intelligence said it staged the reported killing of Dennis Kapustin after learning Moscow's special forces had ordered his assassination. And there's Dennis, looking like Dennis usually looks, which is particularly stoic. That is a typical Dennis pose. And it says, Ukraine staged the death of an anti-Kremlin Russian fighter to prevent his killing, ordered by Moscow's special forces, Ukrainian military intelligence announced on Thursday. On Saturday, Dennis Kapustin, leader of the Russian volunteer corps that has carried out cross-border raids into Russia during the Ukraine war, was declared dead by his group. But on Thursday, Kapustin, also known as Dennis Nikitin, appeared via video link at a briefing with the head of Ukrainian military intelligence, the GUR, who congratulated him on his return to life. His assassination, GUR said in a statement, was ordered by the special services in Russia, which allocated $500,000 to carry out the crime. Kapustin reported his readiness to continue carrying out combat and special tasks at the head of the unit, according to the statement. Kapustin has links to the far right and football hooliganism, and previously organized mixed martial arts fighting events and ran a clothing brand called White Rex. Some of his fighters have openly espoused neo-Nazi views. Russia has declared him a terrorist. In fact, I believe he's been tried twice now in absentia and found guilty of both treason and terrorism and given two life sentences in Russia. And a life sentence in Russia is obviously nothing to be sniffed at, because Russian prisons are particularly harsh. They are not in any way like prisons in the West, which can be a little bit of a revolving door, you know, holiday camp in comparison to the high security prisons in Russia. I've watched a number of documentaries on these things, and they are pretty tough. So Denis now is unlikely to ever return to Russia. Now, a lot of people have said very, very negative things about him. People have jumped to sort of certain conclusions that he's a shill, he's a bad actor, that he's paid opposition, that he's basically working for Zog. Now, I don't actually agree with that. And just as an aside here, I think nationalists tend to look at people who don't agree with them 110% of the time and immediately jump to the, you must be being paid by somebody else. If you don't have exactly the same worldview as me, if you're not doing exactly the same thing as me, if you don't have exactly the same takes as me, therefore you must be a wrong'un. That's been something prevalent in nationalism since I first got involved. You know, somebody disagrees with somebody else, factions are formed, and both factions point fingers at each other saying, well, the other faction, they're all wrong'uns. They're all paid by the enemy. They're all working for the other side. This is obviously subversion. Now, in this case as well, people have accused him of being a Jew. And this is obviously going to come up. People have said he's Jewish. Now, I don't believe he's Jewish. Apparently, his family fled to the West during the time of the Soviet Union. And one way of getting into the West when the Soviet Union existed was to say that your family was Jewish and fleeing persecution. Apparently, they said that as a way to claim asylum in the West. I've heard that the fact that he isn't Jewish from people who know him far better than I do, that he's not Jewish. He never said to me that he was Jewish. I've never heard anyone say he was Jewish until now. People are saying that. I don't believe he is, right? But he might be. He might be. I don't believe he is. What we're going to talk about, though, are the facts. And I'm going to start with the time I spent with Denis. And rather than calling him Denis Kapustin, Denis Nikitin, White Rex, we're just going to call him Denis, okay? That's a lot easier. It's a lot shorter. You know who I'm talking about. The guy on the screen, the guy on the thumbnail. Now, I met him at a mixed martial arts hiking weekend in England in 2016. I believe it was 2016. I might be wrong. If I'm wrong, well, it was 2016, maybe in 2015. But I met him and he was a very imposing character. He's a no-nonsense guy. When you meet him, he's got an aura about him. He's a powerfully built individual. He's got a certain look on his face. He's not messing around. He's not being childish. He's not laughing. He's not joking. He's a serious guy. And he was there for serious business. He was there to train people in MMA, to hike with people, and to make friends with people, to build links with people. And I had the pleasure of training with him. And I've got to say, training with Denis was quite an experience. Now, Denis is the kind of guy who doesn't tolerate messing around. He doesn't tolerate weakness, and he doesn't tolerate tomfoolery. Now, if you're there at an MMA session being run by Denis, and you are acting like a know-it-all, you're acting like a fool, you're not getting stuck in, you're not fit enough, he's going to put you through his paces. And I can tell you this, it was a tough session. But if you go there, doesn't matter what your ability is, if you give your all, if you show that you're willing to learn, if you get stuck in, you will win his respect. And over the time I was training with him, I liked him more and more. I'm going to be honest about this. I enjoyed his company. I really, really did. And I saw his methods. I saw the way he trained. There was one guy there who was like, I know the ultimate way to get out of holds. I can get out of all these holds. Denis put him in a hold and nearly broke his leg because the guy was saying, I can get out of any hold. And Denis showed him he couldn't. That was the kind of guy Denis was. Now, if you were there to learn, if you were there to get better, he was there to teach you and you would flourish under him. But if you were there, as I said, to mess around or to second guess him or think you were going to show him a thing or two, he would show you a thing or two. And Denis was the kind of guy that was clearly an alpha male. If I'm going to give a genuine appraisal of Dennis when I first met him, he was the sort of person you would imagine not being alive now, but being alive in sort of the times of maybe the Vikings or the barbarians. That's the kind of man he is. And over the course of me training with him, myself and the other men that were there, we enjoyed his company. And one of my very closest friends really liked him. And when I informed one of my closest friends that he'd passed on the 27th, my friend was upset about it. He felt sorry. And another guy that I'd not spoken to for quite a while, who's a good friend of mine too, who's, you know, it was really nice hearing from him. He was absolutely heartbroken about this because he'd met Dennis at this thing and really liked him as well. And over the weekend, after initially seeing Dennis, you know, setting up his tent, doing the MMA, I got to spend more and more time with him. We went on a bit of a hike and I spent quite a lot of time talking to him, and I found I related to Dennis in a number of ways. He was really easy to talk to. We had a lot of things in common. We chatted and I enjoyed his company, and we kept in touch for some time after he left, and I wished him all the best with his clothing brand and what he was pursuing in Russia. But he was also a fun guy. When you got past his imposing character, when you got past the kind of man that he was, you know, when you're out there doing physical activity and you were sat with him having some food, he actually, you know, warmed up to you. If he liked you, if you'd won him over, if you'd got on with him during the MMA and the hike, you could actually find that he was really fun to talk to. I remember sitting with him in this pub in the middle of nowhere, and we were eating, and he ordered this dish which came served in a giant Yorkshire pudding. And I'll never forget this. And he's eating this thing and he's like, oh, what is this food? It's delicious. It's delicious. What is it? I was like, oh, it's Yorkshire pudding. It's this traditional dish you have. You can serve things in Yorkshire pudding. He goes, a pudding for a main course? I'm like, mate, that's just how we roll. It's a Yorkshire thing. And he looked at the menu and he's like, what else comes with Yorkshire pudding? And the actual pub did a Yorkshire pudding dessert with like a giant Yorkshire pudding full of like ice cream and honey and different sort of sauces and things. And he's like, I can have this for dessert as well. This is a fine country. And he sort of tucks into his second Yorkshire pudding full of ice cream and honey and other things. And it was really nice. And in the end, you know, I even had a bit of a joke with him. And I remember at one point I made a little bit of a joke. Some people were a little bit uncomfortable. And he started laughing and sort of whacks me on the back. You are a funny guy. And I liked him. And I'm going to be honest, when I heard that he passed away, I was actually really upset about it. I was upset because I liked him. I'd enjoyed my time with him. And when he left England, I considered him a friend and a comrade. And not only was I sad that he was dead, but I was sad at the way he died. Like, I hate modern military operations where people are killed by precision strikes without even knowing they're being targeted. People are hit by drones. To me, there's sort of no honor in that. It's almost like you've turned warfare into a computer game. And I didn't, maybe I did see Dennis dying on the battlefield, but Dennis dying on the battlefield to me would be him stood there, you know, with his shirt off, with an axe in both hands and maybe dozens of bodies at his feet as he finally succumbs to overwhelming odds. And then, you know, dies this warrior's death. But to be killed by some drone, you know, probably in a field in Ukraine somewhere, I actually felt sad about that. And so did many of my comrades. And when I heard that he was still alive, I was actually relieved. I actually felt happy. And I'll tell you how I had another graphic ready for this. The graphic was originally called The Death of Dennis Kapustin and the Tragedy of the Ukraine Conflict. And I was going to, this video was going to take a slightly different tone about the tragedy of a brother's war, the tragedy of seeing a man who you care about going down a route you wouldn't have gone down. And I'm going to go into this because although I view Dennis in a positive light, as you can tell, and I know many people who do, I don't view what he's doing now in that same positive light. And I obviously disagree with this and I haven't changed my opinion on this. And we're going to talk about some of these things now. And basically, this is what makes it a difficult stream, but also a nuanced stream, because, you know, I want to talk about this in a way that is both respectful of somebody that I enjoyed spending time with, but also true to my own political beliefs. So when I found out he was alive, I was happy. And it is an incredible story. You know, this guy, he's out there in the Ukraine, a $500,000 bounty's put on his head. He fakes his own death. He's then resurrected days later. Welcome back to life, Dennis. You know, holding the 500,000 that he's somehow got his hands on that was being put forward on his own head. How much of this is true? How much of this is something that is manufactured for propaganda terms? I don't know. I don't know. But I can say this. If any man was going to pull off something like this, it would probably be Dennis. It would probably be Dennis. That's the kind of guy he is. And, you know, obviously, as I know him, and if he's ever watching this, Dennis, you know, I hope you're well. And I hope at the end of this, you somehow you come out of this unscathed and go on to, you know, do what I've done, start a family, have children, and, you know, live that kind of life. Maybe that's not the life for you, but I still have warm feelings towards you. Whether you do have warm feelings towards me or not, Dennis, considering my take on this, I don't know. If we ever met, maybe Dennis would punch me in the face because I don't agree with Ukraine. In fact, I don't agree with fighting for Zelensky. Maybe he would hate me now. I don't know. But I don't hate him. If you're watching, Dennis, I don't hate you. I'm very relieved that you are alive. And I was greatly saddened by your death, despite the fact you and I are now on separate sides, effectively, in this conflict, or have opposing views on this conflict. And I think this is what makes this personal for me. This is what makes this a little different with me talking about this rather than others, is that I'm acutely aware that me and Dennis have gone down different roads. We hold different views, opposing views. He is at essentially the cutting edge of this war against Russia on what I believe is on behalf of a Jewish establishment in the Ukraine, NATO and the EU, which I despise. I despise NATO and the EU. And I think NATO and the EU are a far greater threat to white people than Russia is. Dennis obviously feels different. He feels that Russia is a much greater threat to him and his people than NATO or the EU. And I disagree with him on that. Now, whether he hates me for that, I don't know. And if he hates me, that would also make me sad because I don't want the guy to hate me. You know, maybe one day me and him will sit down and eat Yorkshire puddings together again. Maybe we won't. Maybe if we met, as I said, he would want nothing to do with me. But that's one of the sad things about politics. You sometimes meet people and you're on the same road and you seem to be on the same course and you're friends and you're comrades. And then there's a fork in the road and you go separate ways and sometimes you end up being enemies. And that's one of the tragedies of what we do. But there's a human side to this, which I think goes deeper than just explaining it as, oh, he's a shill and, you know, I have to renounce ever knowing him or ever liking him. Because I'm not going to do that because this is me being real. This is me talking about this from, you know, a heartfelt place. And, you know, but we're going to go into why I feel differently to Dennis. Now, there's another important thing to address here. And a few people have messaged me this, knowing that I knew Dennis. They said, look, when you met Dennis, did Dennis try to recruit you? Did Dennis try to recruit others there? Was he trying to recruit Brits to Azov, to go to Ukraine? Because this was around, as I say, 2015 time. And I believe Euromaidan, the protest that led to the fall of the pro-Russian Ukrainian regime and the rise of the Zelensky regime. Well, that happened. I want to get the exact date. It is in November 2013. So that had happened. That was before I met Dennis. But no, Dennis never tried to recruit me. He never tried to recruit anyone, actually. When I met him and when I was around him, he was very passionate about his MMA. He was very passionate about all kinds of sort of physical combat, physical fitness. And when he spoke to me, we spoke about really random stuff, sort of more like philosophy, outlook on life, where we want to be in the future. Those were the kind of things that me and Dennis discussed. And they were the kind of things he discussed with other people. He wasn't a recruiter. Now, around this time, I do actually know people that I have a very dim view of who were in the UK recruiting for Azov. I went to a meeting in 2015, a meeting that was hosted by Heritage and Destiny, and they invited a speaker to that meeting. His name was Francesco Fontana. You can look him up. He's a large Italian man. He actually had, in my opinion, a little bit too much to drink. He was very loud-mouthed at the meeting. I felt he was being a little bit rude to other speakers, and he gave a speech at that meeting openly recruiting for people to go and join what he was calling already a war in Eastern Ukraine. I met several young people who were with him that day, and I actually pleaded with those young people not to go to Ukraine, not to join Azov, not to go and fight against Russia. I actually told people, said, you know, and some of these were young lads. What made me really sad, I'm a pretty fit guy, even at 45. You know, I've been on shows where people have asked me to flex. I'm not going to start flexing now. But people have seen me in the chats, like the 9,000 in November. You know, I can knock out 10,000 push-ups in a month. You know, I can go down to the gym. I can still lift. I can still run. I can still bike. I'm in pretty good shape for my age. But a lot of these lads that this Francesco Fontana was trying to recruit, they were very small lads. They were wiry, a little bit spurgy, had these aspirations of being heroes. And it made me feel very uncomfortable to see a grown man essentially trying to get LARPy young lads in the UK to believe that they were going to go to the Ukraine, that they were going to train up, that they were going to be part of some sort of, you know, nationalist brigade over there and break the will of Russia. And all I saw when this guy was doing this was young British nationalists dying in Eastern Europe. And I did everything I could to discourage people in following this Francesco Fontana fella. And it actually disgusted me. But Dennis was never like that. Dennis wasn't recruiting. He wasn't giving anyone a hard sell. He wasn't even mentioning it. He didn't even mention it with me. He made no secret of it that he was against certain aspects of the Russian government and against policies they had. He was against non-white immigration into Russia. He was against demographic change. But that's nothing more than, say, I would say about the government in the UK, or maybe an American would say about the American government. It was a commonality we all held that we were against mass immigration and we wanted to establish respective white ethno states. But other people at the time were recruiting. They were recruiting heavily, and they seemed to be given a free pass by the UK government to do so. And this is something that made me very suspicious, not of the people involved. I'm not saying Francesco Fontana is a state spy or he's a shill or anything like that, but I did find it very interesting that he was allowed to travel to the UK to recruit, which means what I'm saying is I believe in back then the security services were allowing people to be taken to the Ukraine to foment trouble, to hopefully cause this war. And a lot of people talk about this war being fomented under the Biden regime, which is obviously post-2020. But I can tell you now, I saw people actively recruiting for this a decade ago, or more than a decade ago. So this goes back quite some time, a lot longer than a lot of commentators will talk about. Now, people are going to say, why is Dennis fighting for the Ukraine? Why is Dennis fighting against his motherland? Why is he fighting against Russia? Well, I believe that Dennis wants an ethno state in Russia. I believe that Dennis is passionate about that. And I believe that Dennis honestly believes that if the Russian government, or if Russia is defeated in Ukraine, and for a long time, the Western media have told us that Russia is going to be defeated in the Ukraine, that Russia will then break up, that there will be some kind of coup in Russia. And as Russia is by far the largest country in the world, it has so many different distinct areas, which are often populated by different ethnic groups, may I add, that if Russia did break up, I believe that Dennis thinks it would fracture, that it would cease to be the Russia that we know. It would cease to be the cohesive political entity that it is, and there would be numerous breakaway states, there would be numerous parts of Russia that would break away and attempt to become their own independent state. And I think that Dennis believes that if he plays some part in Russia's defeat in this war, and that Russia does break up, that maybe him and other Russians who have aligned with him, other people who are part of his volunteer corps, other people who are fighting alongside his volunteer corps, other Russian volunteer corps will potentially be given or manage to acquire, should we say, land in Russia that they can call their own and set up their own white Russian ethnostate. I think that's what he's going for. Now, do I believe that is likely? No. I think it's a bold idea, but I think it's very unlikely. And people are saying, well, why is he fighting against Russia when Russia's not as bad as NATO and the EU? And I think the answer is, often dissidents hate their own government far more than they hate other entities or other governments. And people have said, well, it's very easy for Americans to say they hate NATO the most because they've suffered under the American government, whereas Russians are more likely to hate their own government because they've suffered under the Russian government. You know, I say I hate the British government the most because I've suffered under the British government. I've been oppressed under the British government, so I hate the British government more than I hate the French government or the German government. But I'm sure any German would tell you that their government is by far the worst and that, you know, living in Britain is nowhere near as bad as living in Germany. So there are different perspectives at play here. However, actively going to war against your own country is something that is a step beyond wanting to acquire power in your own country through legal democratic means. And going to war against your own country and fighting and killing your own countrymen, I think is a step which I can't condone that. You know, in the Second World War, people talk about, you know, British soldiers who joined the Waffen-SS. Well, they were never sent to, you know, Normandy to defend against D-Day. They were sent to the Eastern Front specifically. So their part of the war, their involvement in the war, they were fighting the Red Army. They weren't fighting their own countrymen. And there's always been this sort of taboo of fighting your own countrymen. And when there have been volunteer corps in other wars, generally speaking, those in charge of the volunteer corps do not force that volunteer corps to fight against their own countrymen, because that's something that then creates a serious moral issue. But that's what Dennis is doing, and that's something that I don't agree with, but he obviously does. But worse still, the Russian volunteer corps, they've been part of these incursions into Russia where they have not just defended what they feel is Ukrainian territory, but they've all defended disputed parts of the Ukraine, but they've actually gone into Russia. They've actually essentially invaded Russia. And these invasions are something I completely disagree with, because they've led to the deaths of innocent Russians. You know, innocent civilians have been killed by the Russian volunteer corps. And that's something I don't agree with. I don't agree with using those methods. I don't agree with actions that target civilians. And some of the areas that have been attacked by the Russian volunteer corps are simply defenseless villages, border villages in Russia that have no real strategic military value. They're just places where normal people live, where normal people get on with their lives, where normal people are sort of farming, selling their goods, going to work every day. Then all of a sudden, there's war. Now, people will say, well, hasn't Russia done that? Well, you know, this is all disputed, isn't it? You know, there's the issues of Minsk and Minsk II. There's issues of groups in the Ukraine targeting Russian citizens living in eastern Ukraine. It's complex. But going into Russia and attacking civilians, killing civilians, and innocent people have been shot and killed is something I just can't agree with. And this is where I don't see eye to eye with him. And it doesn't just feel like he's going to war against his own government, but in some ways, and I've not spoken to him about this, but in some ways to me, it feels like he's going to war against his own people. Now, I can't stand the British government, but I would never go to war against the British people. You know, I'd never want to see innocent British people killed. And this is where my feelings towards him sort of change. My personal feelings after meeting him, spending time with him, enjoying my time with him, and, you know, holding that time dear. And again, a British nationalist who was actually relieved when he found out that Dennis was alive, did say, as part of the message that he sent me, look, I'm relieved he's alive. I really enjoyed my time with him, but I don't understand why he's doing this. I don't understand why he's involved in actions that are killing Russian civilians. I don't understand why he's fighting essentially for the EU, why he's fighting for America. I can't see how this is, you know, attacking the greater of two evils, essentially. You know, my friend was more or less, from my point of view, which most British nationalists are, that they view Russia more, I'm not going to say positively, but they see Russia in a better light than they do the EU or NATO. And that, I mean, that's what I've said many times, and I haven't changed my position. So when I see Dennis doing what he's doing now, I am confused and I don't agree with it. And I do fiercely condemn these incursions into Russia that have killed innocent people, because I just can't get behind that. And I'm sure there's going to be people in the chat tonight, maybe fans of Dennis, fans of the Russian Volunteer Corps, say, look, Mark, I don't like what you're saying now. Well, these are my opinions, you know. And I think when you look back at the history of how we got here, I can't see how any of these Russians in the Russian Volunteer Corps are siding with Zelensky. I can't see why they're siding with the EU or NATO. And I'll be honest, if I sat, you know, having a drink now with Dennis, I'd ask him this. I mean, if you look back at the history of this conflict, I mean, it started with Euromaidan. It started with the protests that brought down the Ukrainian government and ended up installing the Zelensky government. But Euromaidan was that big protest, wasn't it, in the square in Kiev. And the media made this big thing that it was actually Nazis and ethno-nationalists and racists and hooligans and right-wing thugs that were part of the Euromaidan protest. And at the time, I remember people saying to me, well, you know, look, Azov's there. There was a group called Right Sector that were there. I can't pronounce how it's pronounced in Ukrainian. I think it's something like Pravi Sector or something, but it translates roughly to Right Sector. And these groups were at the forefront of the Maidan protests. And people were saying, look, Mark, you need to be getting on board with this. And I was like, I'm not getting on board with this. And I said, why should I be getting on board with this? And they're like, look, nationalists are seizing power. They're at the front of these protests. You know, they're smashing through the police. They brought down the government. This is a right-wing coup in the Ukraine. And I said, but what are they fighting for? And the answer was, they were fighting for the Ukraine to be able to join the EU. And at that point, I had my head in my hands. Well, I can see maybe why certain Ukrainian nationalists wouldn't want to be under Russia's influence. But being under the influence of the EU, from an ethno-nationalist point of view, is racial suicide. For me, ethno-nationalists going and fighting in the square in Ukraine, fighting tooth and nail with the security services, with the police, to overthrow a government in order to ensure Ukraine became part of the EU. I didn't understand this, and neither did any other British nationalist. The Ukraine is a white country, and the EU is vehemently anti-white, vehemently pro-migration. The EU is a country that gives white countries like Poland and Hungary quotas that they must fulfill of migrants. You must take these migrants or we will take money off you. We'll fine you. We won't give you the grants that we're meant to be giving you. You know, you will be censored. The EU pumps millions, if not billions, into pro-migrant propaganda, into propaganda that pushes miscegenation. The EU demands freedom of movement and open borders. All of these things destroy the sovereignty of a nation. And they've destroyed countries like Germany, France. You know, Britain got out of the EU for this reason. And then I see a country like the Ukraine, which is white, and nationalists in the Ukraine are fighting to be part of this multi-racial, multi-ethnic, multicultural, pro-immigration, redistributionist bloc. And I'm looking at it and thinking, why are you doing this? Why are you putting your lives on the line for this? Now, I could understand these people at the Maidan protests fighting for Ukraine to remain neutral, to not join Russia and not to join the EU, but to fight to join the EU, it was absolute madness. But I was told by people, look, these nationalists, you know, they might be wrong about the EU, but they're going to get power. They're going to win power. They were the ones at the forefront of this coup. The people won't forget it. The Ukrainians won't forget the sacrifice they made at the Maidan protests. Well, they did. None of those nationalists got to power. Right Sector aren't in power. Azov aren't in power. I didn't see any shift towards nationalism in the Ukraine or any power given to nationalists in the Ukraine post the Euromaidan protests. In fact, I believe, and I'm pretty sure about this, tell me if I'm wrong, guys, because fact check me in real time, one of the leaders of Right Sector was assassinated, most likely by his own government, post the Euromaidan protests to make sure that group didn't gain any more power. And instead of Ukraine remaining neutral, instead of nationalists taking power, what did Euromaidan lead to? It led to the most Jewish government in the whole of Europe rising to power, which is, of course, led by Zelensky. And if you want to know the facts on this, I'm not listing it all now, but go and listen to David Duke. David Duke will lay out just how many, you know, Zionist Jews are part of the Zelensky regime. It's staggering. But all these nationalists were cheering this on, and I didn't understand it. I don't understand it to this day, and it doesn't make sense to me. So to see somebody like Dennis, who I broke bread with, who I enjoyed my time with and still have warm feelings towards, going there and getting on board with the Ukrainian war machine or whatever's left of it, when everyone involved in those Euromaidan protests were betrayed, when there was assassinations of right-wing leaders, when the protests led by nationalists actually resulted in the Ukraine becoming part of the EU, the Ukraine adopting pro-migrant policies, adopting LGBT policies, outlawing LGBT hate speech, I don't understand it. It does not compute with me. And, you know, I look at Russia and I look at Ukraine. I look at the people running Ukraine. I look at the things they're pushing. I look at their embrace of the EU, etc. I do not approve at all of that. And if you look at the Zelensky regime, what can we say? Well, they're pro-LGBT. You know, you have all these pride events. You have the gay nightclubs. You have new anti-LGBT hate speech laws that have been brought in during the war. I mean, how crazy is that? They're at war with one of the world's superpowers, or supposedly at war with one of the world's superpowers, and Zelensky is busy passing new hate speech legislation, but nationalists are fighting for him. Come on. I mean, I'd ask this to Dennis. I'd ask this to anyone in Azov. Why are you fighting for a regime that is bringing in hate speech laws? Why would you fight for any regime that wants to silence nationalists? And, okay, you know, you're at war, but Zelensky's still got time to table these new anti-speech laws. Zelensky's closing down churches. I've seen footage of Russian Orthodox Christians being booed and spat at as they're dragged out of churches. This isn't nationalism. This is something that is paving the way for a multiracial, multicultural Ukraine. Yet people like Dennis, Azov, Russian Volunteer Corps, other nationalists from around the world who've been sucked into this, they're fighting for this regime. And this regime is pro-immigration. We already know that. They joined the EU. We've already seen leading commentators within the Ukrainian regime calling for mass immigration at the end of this war to rebuild. We've already seen the calls that if Ukraine is going to prosper at the end of this war, we need hundreds of thousands of migrants. We've already seen leading Ukrainian officials meeting with representatives from JC Morgan Chase, meeting representatives from BlackRock. They're already carving up whatever's left of the Ukraine. And who are the people in charge of the Morgan Chases, the BlackRocks? Well, it ain't nationalists. It's people who hate nationalists. Why be a pawn in the game for these people? And that's how I see it. Ukraine is a pro-Zorg government. Zelensky himself has already said he would like Ukraine to be a greater Israel. The Ukrainian regime, the Zelensky regime, is notoriously corrupt. They've ripped off the people fighting for them. We've already seen several Jews flee to Israel from the Ukrainian regime who have stolen hundreds of millions of dollars. We've seen others have to resign their posts and go into hiding. Everyone knows about the golden toilet. And on top of that, they're anti-democratic. They've suspended all elections. So what has the Zelensky regime done? Well, pro-LGBT, anti-church, pro-migration, pro-Zog, pro-Israel, pro-EU, ripped off the people, completely corrupt, oligarchs stealing hundreds of millions from the war effort to feather their own nests. And on top of that, they have suspended any election so you can't remove Zelensky. Yet nationalists are still fighting for them. And I look at this and think to myself, this is sad. This is absolutely heartbreaking that nationalists would be out there fighting for this. And my only way of explaining this rationally, and I'm not going to say, oh, every nationalist out there has been paid for by the Jews. They're all operatives. They're all this. Because that's the easy answer. It's not the real answer, is it? These people have made a deal with the devil. That's how I see it. These people have made a deal with the devil. And the devil is not Russia. The devil is NATO, the EU. The devil is the Zionist occupational government in Ukraine. And these people have made a deal with the devil. But the problem is, when you make a deal with the devil, you often end up doing things that are unthinkable. Killing civilians, killing your own countrymen, going into Russia and invading and terrorizing border villages full of normal people. Because that's what a deal with the devil entails. You think you're going to get something that you want. And I'm sure these people sincerely believe that they're going to get that patch of land at the end of this war where they're going to be the ruler, where they're going to be the master of their own destiny, where they're going to have their own mini ethno state. But this deal with the devil they've made means they're going to have to do terrible things to get that, unconscionable things, things that I won't be willing, you know, to travel to a nearby village and kill British people, regardless of what you offered me. It's terrible. I don't think I'd be able to fire on civilians full stop. It's something I couldn't do. And this is something I do not agree with. And I think this deal with the devil is the real problem here. Now, I've said many times, many, many times, Azov and the nationalists fighting in Ukraine, they should have turned their tanks around. They should have turned their Humvees around. They should have taken their weapons and they should have driven straight to Kiev and they should have pulled out the corrupt oligarchs. They should have pulled Zelensky out of his tower and they should have taken power. They should have taken the Ukraine and they should have said to Russia, you can have that bit of borderland. Just let us have the rest of the Ukraine and let us run the Ukraine how we want. I think a deal maybe could have been made there. Root out the corrupt, root out the pro-migrants, pro-migrant politicians, root out the pro-LGBT politicians who are using you, root out the Zelensky government. Because I don't think Russia is the greatest threat to the Ukraine. I think the greatest threat to the Ukraine is NATO, the EU, and for want of a better term, Zog. And I still think that. I debated Greg Johnson on that at the beginning of this war, and I still stand by everything I said in that debate. But one thing this does prove is that the system is completely unscrupulous. NATO, the EU, Zog, they're completely unscrupulous. They will use ethno-nationalists. They hate us. They despise us. The people I'm talking about hate us. But they will use us when they can. If we're willing to pick up weapons, if we're willing to go on a battlefield and do their bidding, to be their pawns, they will use us. And that's why people like Francesco Fontana were allowed to come to Britain and recruit people in pubs in Northern England. It's why people like Francesco Fontana were allowed to talk to impressionable young LARPy nationalists and try to get them to fly to the Ukraine and pick up weapons. Because the people letting him do that will happily let us do their dirty work. But I'll tell you something else about this deal with the devil. Doing the deal with the devil never helped the nationalists after Euromaidan. After Euromaidan, it didn't matter how many nationalists came out of there with broken noses. I'm sure some were killed, but they weren't given a seat at the table, were they? After Euromaidan, the nationalists in Ukraine were given nothing. Zip, nil, nada. Not a bean. The Zelensky government grew out of that. A liberal, pro-LGBT, anti-church, multi-ethnic government grew out of a protest that was fronted by nationalists. Because when you do a deal with the devil, sometimes you have to do unconscionable things, things you should never do. But also, you often don't get what you thought you were going to get at the end anyway. Because that's the nature of doing a deal with the devil, the nature of doing a deal with NATO, with the EU, with the American State Department, with the CIA. If you deal with those people, they get everything they want. You get nothing. And at the end, you get strung out to dry. And that's what I think is going to happen. We never saw Azov and Right Sector gain any power after Euromaidan. In fact, after Euromaidan, the nationalists were shuffled off to one side as Ukraine became the most Jewish country or what the most Jewish establishment in Europe. So what happens post this conflict? Because we know it's coming to an end. We know Trump's meeting with Zelensky, Trump's meeting with Putin. It's back and it's forward. Trump is desperate to end this war. But what happens at the end of this conflict? Excuse me for a second. What happens post the Ukrainian conflict? Will there even be a place for nationalists? Will there be a place for nationalists in the Ukraine? Will there be a place for nationalists, these nationalists in the EU? Well, let's start with the obvious. When this is over, there's not going to be a place for people like Denis in Russia. Denis has already been tried, I believe, twice in absentia and twice found guilty of both treason and terrorism. He's not facing a death sentence, but he is facing two counts of life imprisonment. And that will be in some Siberian gulag. There's no place for Denis after this in Russia. But I don't think there's going to be a place for him in the Ukraine either. I still think Russia are going to come out of this victorious. I think Trump's going to give Russia everything they wanted at the beginning of this war. And if he doesn't, they're going to take it anyway. And I believe the reason Trump is trying to broker peace isn't because he actually wants peace. It's because what he wants is to be able to do a deal with Russia. Because if he says to Russia, look, I helped bring about the end. I helped give you everything you wanted. What can America get out of this? What can NATO get out of this? What can American companies do? And I've heard that part of the deal that Trump's putting forward is that 50% of the money that's earmarked for rebuilding has to be spent with American companies. So Trump isn't doing this to stop lives being lost. He's not doing this out of the good of his heart. He's doing this because he knows that Russia are going to win, but he wants to make sure that America gets something out of that Russian victory. He's no friend of the Ukraine, nor is he a friend of Russia. He just wants to get as much from the table as he can scrape away for himself and for American companies. For American companies, we know what companies we're talking about because we know who owns those American companies. Do you see where we're going with this? So I don't think there's going to be any place for Dennis in Russia. But I don't think there's going to be any place for Dennis in the EU either. Dennis is already banned completely from the Schengen zone. And I can't imagine somebody like Dennis with his views and the views of those in the Russian Volunteer Corps and the kind of things that Dennis was involved in before he joined that, the mixed martial arts, the pro-white fight clubs, the ethno-nationalist hikes, the hooliganism. The EU aren't going to want him because the people who run the EU hate people like Dennis. They despise people like Dennis. They have nothing but contempt for them. They ban them. They want them out. They want to take away their rights. They want to shut them down. So there's no place for him in Russia, and there's no place for him in the EU. And you know what else? I don't think there'll be any place for him in the Ukraine either. When this is over, the Ukraine will simply become another puppet state of NATO. It'll be controlled by the EU. It'll be part of the EU. Is there a place for Dennis there? I don't think there is. Would Dennis want to live in a place with anti-LGBT hate laws? Would he want to live in a place flooded by hundreds of thousands of Indians and third world migrants who are needed to rebuild? No, he wouldn't. And living there, he would constantly be looking over his own shoulder. He'd be constantly checking his back, watching his shadow. Not because he's a fearful man, but because he knows that the Russians don't forget. He knows, especially after this death and resurrection incident, that the Russian special services, Putin, etc., they will want him dead. They'll see this as a humiliation. They'll see this that they have been made to look foolish, and they will be looking for retribution. So this deal with the devil, not only have those in the Russian Volunteer Corps done unconscionable things, killed civilians, attacked their own countrymen, but I don't think they're going to win. And I think when they don't win, I think when Russia and America carve up the Ukraine after this, I don't think there's any place in the Ukraine for Dennis and Azov and the Russian Volunteer Corps. I think NATO and the EU were happy for these nationalists to fight for them as long as they died on the battlefield and then were quietly disposed of afterwards. Because the last thing America, Europe, the CIA, the powers that be will want at the end of this is lots of hardened nationalists with battlefield experience going back to normal lives in places like the Ukraine or Europe. Russia will want them gone, but so will the people who they've been fighting for. So will the Ukrainian regime. So will America. So will the EU. These people are disposable pawns. And at the end of the day, I think they'll be treated like a dirty secret. And I think they'll disappear one by one and we'll find it difficult to go anywhere. And I think this is the sad reality of this deal with the devil. And if I was sat with Dennis now, I'd ask him, what after this? What happens post-conflict? Where is the place for you nationalists? Will anybody want you? But the fact is, I would still sit with Dennis and discuss this with him, because I've met him and I think he's done things that I completely disapprove of, that I think are horrible and that I can't endorse in any way. But I would still sit and say, look, you're a man I know. You're a man I enjoyed spending time with. You know, I've done many streams with Greg Johnson after our debate. I think you can disagree with people and sit and talk to them. And, you know, I do wish the best for Dennis. I hope that You know, somehow he comes out of this and doesn't end up lying dead on a battlefield somewhere. I just wish, as a warrior, he'd chosen a different path. I look at Dennis, I look at that picture of him there on the screen, and I think, that's a guy I enjoyed spending time with. And if I'd have chosen a path for Dennis, it would have been different. And I wish Dennis, the warrior, the fighter, the guy who arranged fight clubs and hikes and ran a clothing brand, I wish he was doing something different now. I wish he wasn't there fighting. I wish he wasn't, you know, behind these incursions into Ukraine, into Russia that's killing civilians. You know, I wish he'd taken a different path. And I think sometimes when you're doing an analysis like this and you know the people involved, it's a much harder thing to sit here and say, look, I know this guy. I like him. We spent time together. But now I'm on a very different side and I view things differently. But I wish things were different. It's harder to say that than it is to sit here and just run through a list of reasons to trash people. Yeah. I think I've made my point clear. I've made my point clear about Euromaidan, and I've made my point clear about the Zelensky regime. I've made my point clear that the greatest evils that threaten the white race are not Russia, they're NATO, the EU, America. I've repeatedly made that point. But the fact is, I still enjoyed my time with Dennis. And one day, I hope he takes a different path to this. And I wish he'd never walked down this road. Because I think at the end of this road, well, I think for nationalists in the Ukraine, the end of this road, unfortunately, is a dead end. And that's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking for me as an ethno-nationalist to think other ethno-nationalists went there with good hearts and maybe with honest intentions, did a deal with the devil, ended up doing terrible things, and at the end of it all, will have nothing to show, or maybe worse, nowhere to live, nowhere to call home, and be hunted as a dirty secret, as a footnote in this conflict, despised not only by Russia, but also by the powers that they pledged allegiance to and ultimately fought for. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show, or the end of the presentation. And if you want to send a donation, if you think I've said something wrong, if you think I've been disrespectful to anyone, please tell me. I'm happy to discuss it. I will read the super chats. If you're watching on replay and you want a super chat, please do. If you like what I've said, please take the time to send a small donation, whether that be on Rumble, whether that be on Odyssey, whether that be on Entropy. It all helps and it means a great deal to me. I hope you've enjoyed what I've said so far, and I hope you feel that I've been respectful and that this is a slightly different take probably to what people were expecting. And I hope this has been a more nuanced take than what others have made, because this wasn't about, you know, salacious point scoring or, you know, a crazy headline. This was something I felt, you know, was important to say and to approach in a slightly different manner. Anyway, we do have some super chats, and thank you so much for everyone who has super chatted. Merry Englander gave $25. Thank you so much. And that's his 4-month subscriber streak. That is very, very kind of you. UK Rob M gave $15. Thank you so much. And he said, best wishes for the new year, Mark. Well, best wishes to you and thank you for your continued support. That means an awful lot to me, as do all donations, but thank you so much. Nationless Nationalist said, I appreciate your work. You bring dignity to those who suffer in silence. Thank you so much. Mr. Skywalker has upset me. No, you haven't upset me. You said something that's slightly upsetting. He said, Devon Stack from Blackpill said he went to Europe over Christmas. Did you end up meeting with him? Not sure exactly where he went, but he made it sound like it was the UK. I'm really sad if he came to the UK and didn't see me, but if he didn't see me or didn't have time, he didn't. I love Devon. I'm going to be in touch with him soon to do a show. I hope Devon had a wonderful Christmas, and I wish him all the best for the new year. The guy's an absolutely incredible man. Enjoy spending time with him, and I hope he had a great Christmas. Mr. Skywalker gave another $3. Thank you so much. And he said, Warstrike did a show on Kapustin. They spoke of his many war crimes against Russian children and civilians while he laughed about them. he was also charming, quite literally a psychopath like the IDF. As I've said, and I think I covered this on the stream, I said that I liked him when I met him. And I also said that the incursions into Russia, the attacks on Russian civilians, and if children have been killed, that's even more grim. I obviously find those things disgusting, and I don't agree with them in the slightest. And I think I referred to it on more than one occasion as Russian nationalists making a deal with the devil being NATO and the EU. And as part of that deal with the devil, they have to do absolutely terrible things. And it's unlikely they'll even get any payoff at the end. I think I was clear about that. I find them disgusting. But thank you so much for raising the point, Mr. Skywalker. It is a point that needs raising and underlining. And I hope I've made that absolutely clear throughout this stream, that I find people who can fight against their own countrymen, especially civilians, I find there's something very wrong with that. So thank you so much for bringing that up. Camarade gave $3. Thank you so much. And he said, very interesting stream. I'd like to wish you and your loved ones a positive new year. Likewise to all nationalists throughout the globe. Keep your country strong, comrades. Well, thank you so much. Some guy 14 gave $3. Thank you so much. He said, exactly. It is impossible to be a nationalist and serve Zog, which is pretty much my point. So thank you so much. I'm pleased people have reacted positively to what I've said. Detruska gave $5. Thank you much. He said, the situation is really complicated. I don't agree with everything you said, but you made some good points. Well, thank you. And look, when I do these streams, I'm not expecting everyone to agree, but I'm trying to put over a nuanced point that I hope people enjoy. And I hope people like the insight into what I'm saying. And I hope I've been clear throughout. But I really appreciate the fact that some people have liked certain things I said, maybe not others, but we're all still friends and fighting for the same cause. Thin Red Line gave $10. Thank you so much. And said, I've heard that Dennis is a Jew. I did address this at the beginning, actually, but you may have missed this bit. Thank you so much for your generosity and Happy New Year to you. It's great to see you in 2026, and thank you very much. Dennis's family sought asylum in Europe during the Soviet era, and I believe, or I've been told, that it was common for people seeking asylum in Europe, especially those seeking asylum in Germany, which his family did, to claim they had Jewish ancestry. And by claiming they had Jewish ancestry, the German authorities virtually never turned down an asylum application from anyone who claimed they had Jewish ancestry, for obvious reasons, because of the old Second World War, alleged war crimes during the Second World War. So it's very, very, it was very common for people fleeing to Germany from the Soviet Union to claim that kind of ancestry. That has been denied, I believe, by Dennis, and it has been denied by members of his family subsequently, and denied by people around him. I don't believe he is a Jew. He gave me no, I've not seen any credible evidence of him being a Jew other than this sort of, you know, reason for him or his family gaining asylum. But that has been sort of denied, and it has been fully explained. Whether it's right or not, I don't know. Whether it's right or not, I don't know. But that is what I've heard. And look, if you look at others who get on with Dennis and that are more pro-Ukraine in this issue, people like the Golden One, speak to him about it. I believe he knows him slightly better than I do. Other people do. And there have been numerous articles, you know, when people thought Dennis was dead, in support of him by a prominent European nationalist who thought very highly of him, that I don't believe would follow through with this. He's Jewish stuff. So, but thank you so much for the super chat. And it's great to see you in the new year. Poit gave $25. Thank you so much for your generosity. I hope you had a great new year. And thank you for starting off the new year with a generous super chat. It means a lot to me. It's great to see you here. Friendly Fash gave $3. And he said, I'm curious if you've seen Stryker's article. He made some bold assertions as to Dennis's heritage and Azov being co-founded by a rabbi. I have read Stryker's article. I thought some of it was good. I thought some of it could have been worded slightly differently. Obviously, Stryker hadn't met Dennis, which puts him in a slightly different position to the position I'm in. And I think sometimes it's very easy to go down this. It was started by a rabbi. This person was involved. That person was involved. This person's got links to this person. I'd have to see really, really strong evidence of that. And as I've said, in this case, I don't believe the evidence is strong. And this isn't just me saying that. There are a wealth of nationalists in Europe, including people like the Golden One, who I've cited several times, people like Freddy Midyard and others, and others who are respected nationalists in the European scene. Obviously, Freddy ran the Scanza Forum, the Golden One. We all know what he does. He's an incredible guy, a really good friend of mine, really like him, who hold Dennis in high regard. Now, if he was some kind of bad actor, etc., or if he was sort of a toxic person, whatever, I don't think people would hold him in the high regard that they do. Now, obviously, I don't condone or agree with, and I completely I completely denounce what Dennis is doing now. He's gone in a completely different direction to where I've gone. Since I've met him, since the time I spent with him, we've gone down divergent paths. I am completely anti-NATO and the EU. Dennis is now essentially fighting with them against Russia. I very much think generally the best takes in America come from Mike Enoch and Warren Baylog. I think Warren said it the best, that fundamentally, you know, the greatest threat to white people in Europe and in America and in the Western world is in fact NATO and American influence. And if you end up fighting for American influence, you are fighting for Zog. And if you're fighting for Zog, you are unequivocally doing the wrong thing. And I would echo that. I think Warren summed it up very well. I think Stryker's article, as I said, it's a good article. But as I say, I have to balance that with what other people that I respect, such as the Golden One, have also said. And I think I've covered that now. So thank you so much. If there's any more super chats coming on Entropy, please can you put them in now? Because I'm just about to do the super chat over, or any super chats over on Rumble. We've got one. It's from Drofwark. I think that's how you pronounce it. And he gave $10 and said, cheers, Mark. Well, cheers to you, my friend. It's good to see you in the new year. I hope you had a great Christmas. And thank you for the continued support in 2026. Well, look, that is the end of the super chats. And I want to say thank you so much to those who did super chat. Thank you so much to those who came tonight and watched. I hope people like what I've had to say. I hope people appreciate the nuance of this stream, the fact that I've discussed this from a personal standpoint, a political standpoint, and given a deep analysis of this. If you do disagree with this, feel free to hash out in the comments section afterwards, but please be polite with others. And I look forward to seeing you later in the week. I've got a couple more streams coming up. I've got Nationalist A Team on Sunday, and I'll be back on Wednesday for Patriotic Weekly Review. Until then, Happy New Year again. Hope you all had a wonderful Christmas, and I hope to see you a lot more. Oh, we got one more super chat. Thin Red Line gave $5 and said, Happy New Year, Mark. Well, thank you so much, my friend. That is very, very kind of you. And thank you for the continued support. If people want to obviously donate after the stream, you can donate via Entropy at any time. You can subscribe or donate via Rumble anytime or buy cryptocurrency. Everything is very, very gratefully accepted. And again, wish you all a happy new year. Hope you have a great weekend. Everyone's probably going to be back to work Monday. That's when the holidays sort of officially come to an end. But I hope whatever's left of them, you enjoy that time with your loved ones and your families. It's great to be back. Hope you've enjoyed the first stream of the year. I'll see you all again soon. Love you all. Thank you, everybody, and good night.